Blog. Beach, Florida, Grand Junction, Colorado, and Rolling Gap, North Carolina. I'm Margaret Bars, one of your hosts for tonight's show, and I'm here in the studio in Jacksonville along with Neil Holland and Bud Hescott, Jim Hart in West Palm Beach, Florida, Bill Joseph in Grand Junction, Colorado, and Steve Thompson in Rolling Gap, North Carolina. And of course, our producer engineer is Eric Otero, computer wizard extraordinaire. Now, you may call us tonight at either of our two phone numbers. The first one is area code 213-816-1611, or you can call us toll-free at 877-572-1861. And you can also send us a message on the chat feature of the webpage that you're logged into. Either way, we want to hear from you. As you know, we try to bring you stories from Eastern's past, from those who participated in its history. And our lines are open during tonight's program that we have for you, which is a bit of a departure from our normal historical theme. We're actually in the parking lot at most typical airport parking lots. Now let's see if we can bring back some of those memories of the many trips made from those parking lots in the employee bus to and from our Eastern jobs. We'll start off by reading some emails from our Eastern listeners. We hope you'll join in with your own tales from the parking lot by calling again our toll-free number, 877-572-1861, or if you have unlimited long-distance service, you can call us at area code 213-816-1611.
Does that sound familiar to you guys that used to be in a parking lot trying to find a parking space? About an acre of land, flat, strip, occupied on most any day to about 85% capacity, about 5% with dead batteries or flat tires, and usually about 1/2 mile to over 1 mile from the workplace, in an area for employees only and their automobiles. Even a few mobile, away-from-home residences can be spotted among the varieties of makes, models, and colors for those commuting to a workplace hundreds of miles away. There may or may not be shelter from the elements, but it's a sure bet you'll not find a space anywhere near such a provision. It's also a safe bet that when you're getting out of your car, your transportation has just left the waiting area. On a 3-day trip, usual thought upon disembarking, the employee's van or bus hears, "Oh, God, where did I park my car?" Oh, for the modern-day key technology, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and even the early 90s, returning people and cars follow you as you walk to where you think your car is parked, only to give up the idea as wasted time because you don't know where it's parked and you've worn out after lugging your suitcase through the row after row of other people's cars. Then it dawns on you that your car is in the garage at home, and you use your wife's car to get to the airport. You've been looking for the wrong car. So the great car search begins anew. Some space seekers will be willing to give you a ride around the parking lot until you find your car, but as usual, there's another car waiting to pounce upon the soon-to-be-vacated space.
That reminds me of a joke. Two ladies are in a bar, and the first lady says, "Why are men the same in parking lots?"
Let's try that again. Two ladies are in the bar, and the first lady says, "Why are men the same as parking lots?" Second lady says, "I don't know. Why?" And the first lady says, "All the good ones are taken, and the ones that are left are handicapped." Car decals, if required, is usually hanging in the rear mirror, or if it's simply a note for some airline passenger who is creative enough to write, "New employee, permit applied for." This simply means the car's owner is trying to get out of paying the high price of the commercial parking lot for several days or a few weeks, willing to have it towed and still come out ahead.
One email listener writes the following. Okay, check this out. "Every day for the past year or so, I park my spotless truck all the way at the end of the parking lot. The spot I park in is the same every day and two spots away from a light pole, far enough so the bird perching cannot bomb my ride. The parking row runs about 150 yards, and the only cars even close to me are 60, 70 yards away. Well, for the past 2 weeks, this guy who bought a brand new Toyota truck about 6 to 8 weeks ago, same color as mine and also four doors, never clean, always looks dirty, every day arrives before me, and now parks in the same spot I've been parking, not two or three spots up or down, but in the same identical spot. Weird, huh? Just thought this was kind of funny. Go figure. My thoughts about this email is, since when did they start reserving spots for employees? Does this mean we now have to park under the bird's nest? Well, in the Atlanta Air employees parking lot, it's not the birds that makes your shiny polished car look like it's been through good old boys' drive-through pig roundup right after a gully wash of a rainstorm, but the fuel residue from the hundreds of airplanes that pass over the car tops at about 100 feet all day long. And by the way, you'll nearly always find a self-service car wash near the airports.
We call this leaving keys in the car. I returned from a trip and saw the blonde flight attendant, who was one of the cabin crew members on the flight I had just worked, inbound, weeping beside her car. "Do you need some help?" I asked. She replied, "I knew I should have replaced the battery to this remote door unlocker. Now I can't get into my car. Do you think they," pointing to a distant convenience store, "would have a battery to fit this?" "I don't know. Do you have an alarm too?" I asked. "No, just this remote thingy," she answered, handing it and the car keys to me. As I took the key and manually unlocked the door, I replied, "Why don't you drive over there and check about the batteries? It's a long walk."
This email just came in from Sally Wilkin, Charlotte, North Carolina. And she said, "From 1969 until the end, I worked with mainframe computers on the Miami Airport base in what we call the Commercial Center, MIACC, as opposed to
Doral,
which was reservations. I was involved with operating system support as opposed to applications. I think our applications included payroll, other financial stuff, and one that always impressed me, which was time on parts. Now, but they tracked the age of every last airplane part. Anyway, this was in the 70s, before we had internet or telephone access to diagnose stuff from home. I had a call at something like 2 a.m. that they were having a system problem and wanted me to come into work. I was a single mom, and I bundled my two little girls into the car, still sleeping. I believe I didn't even have on-base parking access yet, So I drove to the guard gate and described my dilemma. I guess the worst option was to wake up the children and walk them into Building 11. The guard was really nice. He told me to pull my car right up next to his shack, and he would alert me if anyone woke up and needed me. I'll bet that level of child care was not in his job description. Eastern employees were just the best.
Back in the early 1960s, I recall employee parking lot at the Atlanta airport. The old terminal now I'm talking about was just right off Virginia Avenue. Down a road that paralleled the parking lot, right behind a chain link fence. Upon entering the lot, you would nearly always head for the pickup area, thinking there was an empty space within the first few spots of the little red and white Volkswagen minivan stopped to load and unload its designed maximum of 9 to 10 passengers. There were, back in those days, no such thing as signs indicating handicap parking. It was just first come, first serve, which occasionally would rankle one or both drivers' personality and mettle. It was not at all unlikely to cause an impasse, only to be settled by the constant and loud sounds of automobile horns wailing their impatient cry. Finding a spot several rows and spaces away from the pickup area, which location was often forgotten in one's memory, the crew member, in my case, would gather the suitcase, flight bag, coat, and overcoat, depending on weather conditions, and start the dash for the VW minivan, which would always pull into the load-unload area while you were competing for the last parking space in the county, it would seem.
Our driver for several years was a white-haired gentleman, who I guess to be in his mid to late 60s, not very talkative, I'm sure there was a reason for this, associated with the fact he was the driver of literally hundreds of weirdos every day. And as slow as a 1960 Volkswagen bus, that was 10 times its maximum manufacturer's recommended weight overloaded. He seemed to have blinders and only tuned in to his five-minute trip laid out for him by the dark oil trail from thousands of two-way trips made by the VW bus. On any trip at any time, day or night, he and the bus could make that trip blindfolded. Upon arrival at the parking lot on one occasion, there was no driver as the overcrowded passenger load became impatient, some even choosing to walk the circuitous...
Bill, I think you dropped your phone. Try it again.
Upon arrival at the parking lot, on one occasion, there was no driver as the overcrowded passengers load became impatient, some even choosing to walk the circuitous route to the terminal offload area. Knowing where he kept the keys, one of the van riders became the driver to the terminal, knowing that the van would not remain parked very long before the relief driver showed up in the form of someone needing to go home after work. This was not a one-time occasion, as our driver was suspected of being late for work not infrequently.
Before leaving for work on a three-day trip, I packed according to my layover destination, which happened to be Syracuse in the dead of winter on a particular trip. My bag was hard-shelled, brown alligator skin, Samsonite two-suiter. My wife thought it was stylish when she bought it for me one Christmas back in the 60s. Even in my black uniform and overcoat, what did I know about the style, as there was another pilot's wife who thought and brought like my wife for her husband. Guess what? He and I, the same suitcases, were boarded on a VW van for our separate trips. You guessed it. He was going to St. Thomas, and I was going to Syracuse. You guessed it again. He took my suitcase upon divanning, and I took his. He even got my gin. I would see the twin suitcase many times after that unplanned swap and was careful where I put mine just in case he wanted to once again enjoy my gin. And while we were in the parking lot and on a subject of suitcases, it was quite an embarrassment for one Eastern captain who accidentally let go of his suitcase upon entering the bus from the terminal going to the parking lot. You see, as we all on the bus did, we had just remembered returned from Mexico City layover, and to show proof was the beautiful now unfolded pride of the Maria Isabel, Mexico City's finest five-star hotel, king-size robe-style bath towel with the hotel's coat of arms. Of course, every crew member on the bus thought, oh, they've been to Mexico City, you thief.
Well, the fight. You would have to have flown with this one Atlanta-based captain to know what eventually would trigger a showdown in the Eastern parking lot by a first officer. Anything done by a flight deck crew member on his trip would always end up in a high downgrading of performance from this captain. This particular first officer had flown several trips with the captain and reached his limit of holding back the anger stored for this moment when they were in the debriefing period after completion of the trip back to Atlanta. Well, after the last insult delivered by the captain, the first officer grabbed the captain by the tie and the collar of his shirt, and eye to eye, about 5 inches, said, "I'll finish this conversation with you in the parking lot, where the stripes will come off." And with that, the first officer turned and headed for the employee bus and arrived to the parking lot. Now, knowing the car the captain drove, he walked through the parking lot looking until he located the car and verified the county on the license plate as being the one belonging to the captain. He now only had to wait for the bus bringing his mark to the fisticuffs that were sure to get some shift change workers' attention. Well, the arriving bus drove past the captain's car on the way to the drop-off shed. Of course, the captain saw the first officer sitting on the hood of his car and immediately decided to make another round trip on the bus by staying on and not getting off. Well, the next trip, the captain noticed the first officer standing upright on the hood of his car, jumping up and down on it as the bus passed for the third round. Well, the next bus delivery was without the captain, who apparently decided to stay in the safety of flight operations until enough time had surely passed that the first officer would give up his threat and make good his promise of restitution of honor. Several witnessed the scene above and actually heard the threat made by the first officer and rode the bus to the parking lot to get a ringside seat to the exhibition by these two pilots. Well, this story would continue for many years later, and as far as I know, punches were never delivered.
Now let's share some simple parking lot rules. Howard?
Rule number one. When waiting for a parking spot, stop in the middle of the road. Don't signal. And orient your car diagonally to prevent others from passing. Rule number two, always park on the lines, taking up as many spots as possible. Diagonal parking is definitely preferred. Rule number three, in a crowded parking lot, if you find a spot and have the opportunity to pull through to an adjacent one, drive up halfway and stop on the line, taking both. Rule number four, as you pull into a spot, if you see that the space ahead of you is empty and you see another driver signaling to take it, immediately pull through and take it away from him. Rule number five, always park close enough to the adjacent car so that the other driver must grease up with Vaseline to squeeze into his or her car. Of course, you want to be sure this is a commuter vehicle and not a new sporty one. Rule number six, while getting out of your car, hit the adjacent vehicle with your door really hard. Rule number 7, when driving through the parking lot, ignore the painted lines and drive diagonally from one end to the other at a high rate of speed. Rule number 8, when waiting to pick up a friend or relative, make sure that you're stopped in the absolute middle of the road. Rule number 9, when a vehicle from the opposite direction is signaling and waiting for a parking spot, position your car so that you're in his way and let the car behind you take it. And finally, rule number 10, if you hit the adjacent car with your door and have it leave a dent, wait for a car which is painted the same color as yours to drive down the aisle looking for a place to park. Then you back out, giving up your space to him, and you look like Mr. Good Guy, and then you go park somewhere else.
Jim, you got some more?
There are 10 more, I think. Rule number 11. If the vehicle in front of you stops to let a pedestrian cross or another vehicle turn, pull into the lane of opposite traffic and attempt to pass him. Rule number 12, deleted for those who are superstitious. Rule number 13, when driving through a parking lot with alternating one-way aisles and angled parking spots, drive the wrong way. Then when you see a parking space, take 20 minutes to do a 12-point turn and then pull into it. Rule number 14, empty your ashtrays on the ground in the parking lot. While you're at it, dump all the garbage too, including that Wendy's or McDonald's bag sitting in the back seat from breakfast. And if you're a beer drinker, that's great. Just place those empty cans there also. Rule number 15, if you're forced to change an infant's diaper in the parking lot, leave the soiled diaper under the car next to you. This is bound to get someone's attention. Rule number 16, when another vehicle is waiting for you to pull out of a spot in a crowded parking lot, just take your time. Adjust the mirror, adjust your seat and the radio, roll down your window, light a cigarette, and eat your lunch if you want to. Feel free to go through your shopping bags and look at what you just bought. Make sure your foot is on the brakes so that one would think you're about to pull out of your parking space. Rule number 17, when walking back to your car, after getting off the employee bus, gesture to other drivers waiting for a spot to make them think that you are getting in the car and leaving. Then walk between the cars to the next aisle and do it all over again. Rule number 18, when walking back to your car, if you notice other employees walking past your car to get to theirs, press the buttons on your keychain remote so that your car's alarm makes a sudden loud bloop, beep, and that scares the crap out of them. Rule 19, if you don't see a speed limit sign posted in the parking lot, there really is none. There isn't any speed limit. Rule number 20, if you back into a parked car and the driver isn't with it, take out a piece of paper and pencil and start writing. This is especially effective if there are maybe 15 or 20 witnesses. Write on a piece of paper, there were X number of witnesses when you hit your car. They think I'm writing my name and address, phone number, and so on, and my insurance information and so on this paper. But I sure am not going to do that.
This email is from Barbara, and she calls it Fall from the Bus Leaving the Parking Lot. She says, I had packed for a 4-day trip and a trip home after the trip, so I was loaded with luggage. A flight attendant had just boarded the bus, and then I stepped up to the last step of the 3 steps and was in the stairwell. a pilot was immediately behind me. The bus driver hit the gas, accidentally, I guess, and I crashed to the floor along with the pilot. The pilot was not hurt, but I had a fractured ankle and was taken to the good old airline dock in the box. Hurt like heck, and the story was that the driver was relieved of his position. As was our style, the whole episode took on a life of its own with lots of good humor. I can't remember the dates or the names, but it's probably on somewhere. Oh, let's see. I remember the pilot saying things like, "Wow, this is not how I had hoped to meet you." And whether it be rumor or fact, the driver had self-medicated and was drunk as a cooter hound. I do know that someone took over to make the rest of the trip to check in. The garment bag I was carrying had ripped, and the contents were scattered over the aisle of the bus with a mixture of ski clothes for the layover and summer clothes for the trip home to Pensacola. The wheelie holding the suitcase knocked me in the head. My head is so hard, it didn't hurt, but I had a black eye, which prompted all sorts of stories like, who hit you, the flight attendant or the pilot? I was out on sick leave for a week. It was pretty bad. I remember the doc saying, gee, I wish it had been a break because a torn ligament is harder to heal. The compassion somehow was lost on me, but in my old age, I still have a few aches in cold weather with that foot. And as a side note, some of us that were really good buds would crowd in my red VW convertible bug in the parking lot after the trips. I actually did take pictures, but I can't share. One of the really funny crew schedulers started a rumor that the group had met in the bug prior to boarding the bus and had shared an adult beverage. He always kidded me, but the doc could attest to the fact that the only thing we had to drink was lots of coffee, as it was a Dawn Patrol check-in. Such good memories. It's all good, and I miss it still. I'm glad I stayed to the bitter end. No regrets.
Another EAL listener emailed that as a practical joke, he always enjoyed leaving a fake note on someone's car windshield that he particularly did not like that reads, "Sorry about the damage I caused to your automobile. Call me and I will be more than happy to pay for the repair. Be sure not to leave a phone number. Of course, there is no real damage, but the victim doesn't know this. He or she will be looking all over for a dent or scratch or something."
That's good. I witnessed an employee pull into the employee parking lot and roll down her car windows to make sure her Labrador Retriever had fresh air. The dog was stretched out in the back seat, and apparently the airline employee wanted to impress upon the dog that he must remain there. She walked to the curb backwards, pointing her finger at the car and saying emphatically, "Now stay. Do you hear me? Stay." I couldn't miss the opportunity when I drove by the owner and said, "I don't know about you, lady," he said, "but I usually just put my car in park."
Well, my good friend Captain Harry Hall told me about this incident that happened to him arriving in Miami for his trip to Los Angeles. He was driving his little yellow Mazda, whose air conditioner was not working, and it being in the summertime, he wore a red shirt so as not to get his uniform shirt wet and sweaty. But when he got to the airport, he drove down a one-way street leading into the post office at the terminal building. After entering this one-way street, he changed his mind and was backing up the wrong way on the one-way street. Around the curve behind him came a car up and behind him, and he had to climb the curb up onto the bank to keep from hitting Harry. As the car passed, the driver shook his fist and made other very unflattering gestures at Harry. Well, Harry proceeded to the employee parking lot and changed his shirt from the red one to his uniform shirt. Well, en route to Los Angeles, the first officer related an incident happening to him getting to the airport. He said he was driving down the driveway into the post office when some blankety-blank so-and-so in a little yellow car was backing up the wrong way on the street, and he ended up having to climb the curb and up on the bank to keep from hitting him. Now, my friend Harry made no admissions or comments about this incident, and they continued on to Los Angeles. Well, unfortunately, Harry had only the red shirt, other than his uniform shirt, for the layover. So he elected to remain in the room for the entire layover instead of risking being seen in his red shirt. And to you, Neil. Are you there, Neil?
I think we lost him.
Over in the New Orleans International Airport employees' parking lot, Woodrow was driving down each of the obviously filled employees' parking aisles in a sweat because he was nearly 30 minutes late for work and couldn't find a parking place. Looking up to the heaven, he said, "Lord, take pity on me. If you find me a parking place, I'll go to Mass every Sunday for the rest of my life and to give out my lightning. Miraculously, on the turn into the next parking aisle, a parking place appeared. Bordeaux looked up again and said, "Never mind, Lord, I found one."
Folks, we had an interruption. We had an interruption in our internet connection. And Steve, would you read again? Steve, are you still with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, can you continue reading about the en route to Los Angeles, about the first officer?
Yes.
If you'll read the last two, because that email, that's what you had sent. Go ahead and tell us that.
I think you left it with it. It had the red shirt.
Yeah,
okay,
red shirt.
To refresh you, that Harry was backing up the wrong way on a one-way street, and another car passed him by hitting the curb and climbing the bank, and as he passed him, he shook his fist and made other unflattering gestures at Harry. And Harry proceeded to the parking lot and changed his shirt from the red one to the uniform shirt. Now, en route to Los Angeles, the first officer related an incident happening to him getting to the airport. Said he was driving down the drive into the post office when some blankety-blank so-and-so and a little yellow car was backing up the wrong way on the street, and he ended up having to climb the curb up on the bank to keep from hitting him. Now, Harry made no admission or no comment about this, and they continued on to Los Angeles. But unfortunately, the only shirt that Harry had for his layover was the red shirt, and other than his uniform shirts. So Harry elected to remain in his room for the entire layover instead of risking being seen in his red shirt.
good idea. We have some industry news from this past week we would like to relay. And Steve, I think you've got the first one. It's about why it's so hard to make money running an airline. I think it's an interesting story that most of us have read. Can you give us that one?
Yes, I sure can. Well, the dateline is New York, December 3rd, 2011. Airlines may defy the law of gravity, but you can't ignore the math. When American Airlines sought bankruptcy protection this week, it marked the 189th time a U.S. airline has done so since the government deregulated the industry in 1978. Most live to fly again, as American will probably do. Some were grounded forever. Expensive labor contracts, erratic fuel prices, and passengers used to cheap cross-country fares were to blame this time. Well, other times, costly planes, fears of terrorism, and even outbreaks of disease have pushed airlines to the breaking point. It's just a crapshoot, said Bill Differenfer, CEO of Skybus Airlines, which stopped flying on April 5th, 2008, after less than a year in business. It was the third airline that week to fail. In the past decade, U.S. airlines have lost a combined $54.5 billion and failed to make money in 7 of 10 years. So why is it so hard to make money running an airline? Well, planes are expensive. A Boeing 737 list price about $80 million and leasing one is about $300,000 a month. Oil prices, too, are volatile. Fuel is the airline's largest expense. American paid an average of $2.32 a gallon of fuel last year and expects to pay $3.01 a gallon this year. Yes, some drivers pay more for gasoline, but consider this. American used 2.5 billion gallons of fuel last year. Mechanics, pilots, and other employees have very specialized jobs demanding higher salaries. Government regulations and union contracts limit the length of workers' shifts, often creating logistical challenges. Recessions. When businesses fold or vacationers lose jobs, the airlines lose passengers. The uncontrollable. Snowstorms, volcanic ash clouds, earthquakes, outbreaks of diseases like SARS, and terrorism can ground planes or scare passengers away.
We lose them again?
Steve, we need you to call back, and you dropped off the air, but we'll continue reading that.
I'm sorry about that. I got a
okay, go ahead. Go ahead and continue reading that. Go ahead.
Okay. Besides all of that, airlines have to worry about what their competition does. If one carrier cuts fares, everybody else usually matches. Even if it cuts into profits because they know flyers will go to another airline that's $10 cheaper. Then there's the brash, eager entrepreneur who decides to siphon away passengers with a hip new airline offering deeply discounted tickets or short skirts. That was added by me, of course. United and Continental used to fly more than half of the passengers out of San Francisco, 53% in 2006. Then Virgin American jumped into the lucrative transcontinental business. By 2010, less than 45% of the passengers flew United or Continental. Virgin accounted for more than 6% of San Francisco's traffic. United had to lower prices to compete and made less money off those passengers it did retain. The competition doesn't even have to be profitable. Virgin American lost $661.4 million since it started flying in August 2007. Well, it's a business where competitors enter your market at 540 miles an hour, Jim Smicek, CEO of United Continental Holdings, said in an October interview. For American's parent AMR Corporation, the strains were too much. By Tuesday, when it filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, it had $29.6 billion in debt and only $24.7 billion in assets. The rest of the industry has managed through ups and downs and expected to turn a profit this year. That's because airlines today are more willing to raise fares and offset fuel costs and are more cautious when deciding to whether or not to enter a new market, said Philip Bagley. And airline debt analysis at Standard & Poor's, and passengers know the airlines don't give away much anymore, any longer. Dislike, he said. Where and how much should they charge? Flying was expensive, but airline generated healthy profits. Liquidation on its website, the tickets fell, but so did profits. Set up for another era. Braniff Continental, pardon me, and Eastern went bankruptcies, and handful did, but most struggled to understand the complexity of the business and eventually failed. People Express was one. Donald Burr founded the airline in 1981 and turning a profit, which basically killed us much overnight. It was a Gatling gun against a Colt revolver. Less than 2 years, 2 years later, Continental bought the struggling airline. So if that's such a tough business, why does anyone go into it? Well, it's not making toilet paper, Burr said. It's a very sexy business. I don't think it has problems. Okay, Bill.
Reuters reports that millions of Americans remember U.S. Airways pilot Chesley B. Sully Sullenberger III. In 2009, he became an instant hero for saving 155 lives by landing on New York City's Hudson River when his aircraft lost power after it was struck by birds shortly after taking off. But few know that, like thousands of other airline employees, Sullenberger was struggling financially at the time because two U.S. Airways bankruptcies had derailed his pension and slashed his salary 40%. We had saved some money, but not enough to make up everything we were losing, says Sullenberger, who has since become a successful author, consultant, and volunteer. His fellow pilots were mostly in their late 40s or 50s, he says. We didn't have a lot of time to regain what we had lost. Soon, roughly 130,000 workers, along with retirees at American Airlines and parent AMR Corporation, could face similar difficulties. On Tuesday, American became the last major domestic airline to file for bankruptcy protection. The airline has not announced yet whether it plans to unload its pension, but the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation estimated on Tuesday that its four plans are $10 billion underfunded. American spokesman Tim Smith says a Chapter 11 reorganization, quote, does not necessarily mean that, unquote, a company will terminate its four plans, which collectively have an $8.3 billion in assets, according to the PBGC. Americans' pension and retiree medical plans are very expensive. The company spends more on them than our competitors, he says. These costs and many other factors are considerations when deciding to continue these benefits. Other airlines, including United, Delta, and U.S. Airways Group, Incorporated, abandoned their pensions in recent years when filing for bankruptcy, costing the PBGC more than $11 billion. It's too soon to say what American will do, says Mark Hopkins, a spokesman for the agency. But the PBGC estimates that employees and retirees could lose $1 billion in pension benefits if it has to take over the plans. That is because annual benefits are capped if the agency assumes responsibility for a pension plan. The limit is $54,000 for employees whose companies dropped their plans in 2011. While that is enough to cover most benefit payments, more than 20% of airline workers were affected by that cap in the past, according to a 2008 PBGC study of 17 airline plans between 1990 and 2005. Bud Kaufman, an American captain who is also chairman of Allied Pilots Association's Government Affairs Committee, says the union and airline are still negotiating benefits. Most experts agree that employees will likely receive only self-funded 401k benefits, which are different from company-sponsored pension benefits. Until now, American employees have had a 401k option, as well as the pension plan and a second defined contribution plan, which was funded by the plan company. Employees were notified on Tuesday that future retirees can no longer get a lump sum distribution because the plan is now underfunded. However, those who retired this fall, including more than 300 pilots, could still receive their lump sum pension distributions. This is a relief for American Airlines Captain Rod Carlone, 61, who retired sooner than he planned in October, primarily because he wanted a lump sum payout. The typical distribution for a captain with about 30 years of experience is about $1 million, according to Allied Pilots Association. I look like a genius now, said Carlone, who lives in Las Vegas, Nevada. But for him, the decision to retire was simpler than it might be for colleagues paying for college or not old enough to leave the workplace. A lot of guys have to be hurting really bad, Carlone said of some of his colleagues. Captain Joel Jepson made a similar decision. The 61-year-old retired on October 1st after 33 years with American. It was tough to walk away, says Jepson, who lives near Dallas, Texas. I was going to fly until at least 62 and maybe slow down then. I'm in great health and I love the job. Jepson, who is still waiting for his lump sum distribution check to arrive, says he is fretting about the status of former colleagues. I've got several friends that selected to stick around, and I'm sure they're not feeling too good about it. I'm not worried about what the bankruptcy courts decide for the people who are really, I'm more worried, he said, about what the bankruptcy courts decide for the people who are already retired, he says. Kaufman, who has been an American for 23 years, knows his benefits will change, but at age 53, he has more time than older colleagues to save for retirement. While a bankruptcy is tragic, the company has been struggling, and this could help American rebuild, he says. Kaufman compares the situation to the training pilots receive about handling an engine fire. Pilots are taught to anticipate a problem, but cannot act on it until it occurs. To an extent, this is very similar, says Kaufman, who is based in Miami. There is no longer anxiety about whether the company will enter Chapter 11. Now we have a path rather than worrying about decision. America's bankruptcy filing was sad news, says Sullenberger, who can relate to what is happening. A day before the fateful 2009 flight, Sullenberger talked with his wife about selling their home to save money. He planned to fly until he was at least 65, the mandatory retirement age, and then get another job to make up for his pension and income loss. You can imagine how hard that would be at 65 for someone who had worked a professional career as a pilot, Sullenberger says. Where would you go? What would you do? Tens of thousands are facing this, and not just in the airline industry.
Switching gears, as we all know, airline food is notoriously unappetizing. But can it kill? That's a claim in a suit recently filed by the wife and daughter of the late Othon Cortez against American Airlines and the contractor that prepared his in-flight meal. The two plaintiffs allege that Cortez died after eating a meal on a transatlantic American flight. And in their lawsuit against the airline and SkyChef, a German company subcontracted to prepare food on American Airlines flights, the Cortezes allege that the meal served on Cortez's flight between Barcelona, Spain, and New York was contaminated with bacteria. The Cortez family suit, filed in a Miami district court, accuses American and Sky Chefs of failing to properly maintain or prepare the food and alleges that the companies allowed the food to become contaminated with the Clostridium perfringens bacteria. CNN reports that the perfringens bacteria transmits one of the most commonly reported foodborne illnesses in the United States, but it's rarely fatal. A few deaths are reported each year as a result of dehydration and other complications associated with food poisoning. After his flight landed at John F. Kennedy International Airport, Cortez, 73, began to feel discomfort and pain that included sharp stomach cramps and sudden thirst and other clear outward manifestation of severe physical illness, the suit alleges. Once he boarded his connecting flight to Miami, Cortez experienced nausea and shortness of breath and suffered a cardiac event that left him unresponsive. The plane made an emergency landing in Norfolk, Virginia, but Cortez was pronounced dead on arrival. SkyChefs, the German company that makes airline meals for more than 300 airlines, has petitioned to get the suit dismissed. Based upon the allegations in the complaint, it's not possible that SkyChefs is the responsible party because we did not cater the Barcelona flight in question, said spokeswoman Josephine Corsten. An unusual part of the lawsuit alleges that American Airlines was at fault for allowing Cortez to board the second leg of his flight since he was in a compromised state. As the Department of Transportation told MSNBC, It's far more common for aggrieved airline passengers to lodge complaints for the opposite reason. We're not aware of receiving any complaints regarding passengers whom the airline should have denied boarding due to illness, but who nevertheless were allowed to fly, DOT spokesman Bill Moseley told MSNBC. Instead, he said, the agency typically hears from passengers who are trying to board a plane but are then prevented from doing so.
And now, we have
hang on a second, Jim. Jim, just a second. We got a report here. We've got something off the wires. Washington. The top U.S. aviation safety official, Randy Babbitt, left his job temporarily on Monday following a drunken driving arrest over the weekend, Transportation Department officials said. The Obama administration is in discussion with legal counsel about the status of Babbitt's employment as Federal Aviation Administration Administrator, the Department of Transportation said in a statement. Babbitt, 65, was pulled over on Sunday night in Fairfax, Virginia, for driving on the wrong side of the road, the police statement said. Babbitt was alone in the car, and there was no accident. He was charged with driving while intoxicated and cooperated with authorities, police said.
Now, just as a note, Randy Babbitt, the administrator for the FAA, the highest job with the Federal Aviation Administration, was once an Eastern pilot.
Likes his gin, too.
Jim, you are about to have a Christmas luncheon. Can you tell us all about it?
Yes, thank you, Neil. The annual Palm Beach Christmas Luncheon is going to be held this coming Saturday at 12 noon at the Atlantis Country Club in Lantana, Florida. It's just behind the JFK Hospital on Congress Avenue. The price is $30 per person, which includes tax and tip. Now, if you would please, when you're reserving your choice, give me a call or give Beverly Newlin a call and let her know if you would like prime rib, boiled salmon, or chicken Florentine. You can call Bev if you'd like at 561-487-9987 or call me at 561-795-4854. And, of course, there's no check involved because if you're coming, just bring cash and we'll take care of you. Let us know that you're going to be there. We want everyone to come. Right now we have 48 confirmed reservations. We'd love to have 50 or more. Thank you very much.
There's a Christmas party at Bob's Place. That's the location. It's 230 Jericho Turnpike, Floral, New York. For more details, call John Santagata at 516-795-8729 or 516-354-8185. The cost for members, very inexpensive, $25. For non-members, $35. There will be a cash bar.
We understand that the Orlando chapter of EARA is holding a Christmas dinner at Victoria's Oyster Bar and Grill, and the date is set for December 11, 2011. For time, directions, and cost, please call Schmidt at 407-669-8200.
And there's a Yankee Christmas celebration December the 17th for the Washington, D.C. area. Contact Gene Ferguson at 540-364-1251 for time and location.
Our website has some exciting new pages.
We're now including bits of REPA news and Silver Liner news that comes our way. Please visit these pages, and also they would welcome you as a member or affiliate member should you wish to join either or both of these great Eastern Airlines organizations. Their purpose is to keep the memory of Eastern alive and keeping the family in touch with each other.
Did you know that you can send us pictures or videos of your chapter meeting for posting on the website? It's another great way for you to see former colleagues that you haven't seen in quite some time. And if you have a smartphone, it's a great tool and means of getting pictures and video clips to us for immediate posting. We're trying to make your website one that will bring you back daily for current events and entertaining news. It's your site. Tell us what you'd like to see. We've added Facebook for additional Eastern contacts. It's a secure Facebook page, so log in at the bottom of the homepage or go directly to www.facebook.com/EAL Radio.
Now, we've talked about the parking lot this evening and a lot of things that have happened in the parking lot. I have to tell you something from my personal experience. I was based at Washington Dulles Airport, and the hotels were very few far between, also very expensive. Well, one evening, laying in bed, I came up with a tremendous idea. Let's buy a motorhome. So he went out and bought a diesel pusher, drove it from Jacksonville, and parked it in the employees' parking lot at Washington Dulles Airport. It was great. You could get up in the morning about 7 o'clock. I would walk down in from my bedroom, take one step down into the kitchen, in my underwear, heat my coffee, and sit at the window and watch the world go by. The good news was I had chauffeur limo tint, so I could see out, but no one could see in. It was quite interesting. I didn't have to watch TV at night. There was a lot of activity going on in the parking lot. And I actually made friends with some of the security people as they were curious to see me barbecuing next to a Cadillac. They came over, I offered them hamburgers, and they watched out for my motorhome until I had to retire. So it was quite the experience. And it was cost effective. It did save me a lot of money, and I got to learn a lot about life in the employees' parking lot.
That's great. It was a lot of fun tonight talking about parking lot experiences, and we've all shared rides on the employee bus back and forth, and that's about all the time we have for tonight, and that's our show. So we hope that you'll join us next Monday, same time, same station, when we bring you our 48th live radio broadcast of the EAL radio show. So from all of your hosts and the Eastern family, where all the women are unequal, all the men are good-looking, and all the children and grandchildren are above average, we'll say...
Good night, Neil, Bud, Jim, Bill, Howard, and Steve, and it's so glad that you're back on the show.
Good night, Margaret, Neil, Jim, Bill, Howard, and Steve. Welcome back, Steve. Glad you're here.
Good night, Margaret, Bud, Bill, Jan, Neil, Howard, and Steve. It's great to have you back with us.
Good night, Margaret, Bud, Jim, Neil, Howard, and Steve. Nice having you back with us tonight.
Howard has already left for the evening. And Steve?
Good night, Margaret, Bud, Jim, Neil, Bill, Howard, and thanks to all of you for your thoughts.
Good night, Jim, Margaret, Bud, Jim, Bill, Howard, Steve. We've missed you, Steve, and we're very glad that you're back as a regular. And good night, Luann, wherever you are.
Good night to all.
Good night,
folks. Good night, Houston family.
Good night, everyone from West Palm Beach.